produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. First up today, we'll have a News Point interview regarding the California Superior Court's tentative ruling against the San Diego County Board of Supervisors in their challenge to Proposition 215. Also today, we'll speak with Dan Vietz, the vice chair of the Normal Foundation, about director Robert Altman and his involvement with the Normal Advisory Board. And we'll wrap things up today with a little music from podshow.com. And don't forget to do a little early holiday shopping. We have links for some Normal gifts that you can buy online and support marijuana legalization. Just go to normalaudiostash.com. We have a News Point interview today. Last week, a tentative ruling was issued in California's Superior Court regarding the San Diego County Board of Supervisors' challenge to Proposition 215. The tentative ruling was against the county board, who claimed that federal law preempted state law regarding marijuana. The case started over the county failing to act on California's SB 420, requiring counties to issue medical marijuana identification cards. San Diego Normal was named in the suit and was essentially sued by the county. Joining us to discuss the case is Jeremy Blank, San Diego Normal's attorney in the case. Jeremy, thanks for joining us here today.
Morning, Chris.
Jeremy, San Diego Normal was brought into this lawsuit, but the local Normal chapter is not being sued for money or damages. This was part of the legal action of the San Diego County supervisors, part of their overall strategy to try and fight state law.
That's a good way of looking at it. Our attitude is that we got dragged into this case. We exercised our right to petition the government for a redress of our grievances, and they reacted by suing us. Obviously, their beef is not with San Diego Normal. Their beef is with the voters and the legislature of the state of California. But yeah, I think that's an accurate way of putting it, is that we threatened to sue, and we got sued in return.
As a lawyer, Jeremy, I have to ask if this is common for an advocacy group to petition their local government and then have that local government come back and sue them.
It's pretty rare. And again, we weren't petitioning for a change. We were petitioning for compliance with state law. San Diego County and San Bernardino County and Merced County are political subdivisions of the state of California, and they don't get to decide what laws they want to and don't want to comply with. To take it to its extreme example, it says San Diego doesn't get to say we don't want to make murder illegal. It's illegal under state law, and they have a duty to enforce it.
Jeremy, what were the points that San Diego Supervisor's legal team really focused on in the trial?
Well, there were two main arguments, two main issues raised in the case. The first was whether or not the Medical Marijuana Program Act, which was adopted by the legislature of California, whether or not that was an unconstitutional amendment of the original Compassionate Use Act, which was adopted by the voters of the state of California back in 1996. So that was one issue, since there are some legal issues with how far the legislature can go in amending a voter-approved initiative. But the main argument was the question of federal preemption, whether or not the federal government, through the Controlled Substances Act and various other federal provisions, treaties, et cetera, the Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs, whether or not the federal government's the state's action in this matter was preempted by federal law. So that was the main issue that was focused on by San Diego and the other counties, whether or not it violated the county's obligations under federal law to issue ID cards so that people could legally possess marijuana, which of course remains illegal under federal law.
And San Diego also ushered in the federal authorities to enforce federal marijuana prohibition as they filed this suit. Now, one would assume that a county is more beholden to state law.
Well, the question of whether or not the federal government should or shouldn't intrude is very different from whether or not they have the power to intrude. You know, we know from the recent DEA raid in San Diego and many other places that the federal government does have the right to enforce its criminal laws any place in the United States. There's no real question of that. This case was not about the criminal penalties section of the Compassionate Use Act, the elimination of criminal penalties for medical marijuana users and caretakers. What it was about, it was mostly centered on the ID card program and the state telling counties you have to issue these IDs, that they're useful for the purposes of law enforcement, that they're useful in protecting patients and caregivers from arrest and prosecution. So in terms of deprioritization ordinances and things of that nature, you know, those are very useful in guiding local law enforcement and prosecutors in how they should approach these cases. But none of them obviously provides protection from the federal government's ability to come in and make arrests and do seizures and things like that.
So, Jeremy, while this case surrounded medical marijuana in California, this really came down to a legal clarification of our whole process as a republic. Do local governments have to follow the will of the voters? In the end, it sounds like the real winner in all of this is our own democratic process.
Absolutely. And again, this ruling has not been trial judge has not affirmed this tentative ruling, so I'm a little bit premature in if I were to declare victory. But assuming that it is affirmed, I think you're right that it's not only a great victory for patients and for physicians who now have the for whom it's now very clear that they can recommend marijuana for their patients who need it. That they have the discretion to do that, that we will leave it up to the professional judgment. But I think you're very right in that it is a great victory for the democratic process. It tells the voters of the state of California that if you all vote for a proposition, that it's going to be carried through in each and every one of the 58 California counties, that it doesn't depend on where you live and whether your local board of supervisors likes the marijuana laws or not. You're going to have the right to have the democratic process implemented and that you're not going to have to worry about the actions of your local government when the state government and the state voters have spoken.
Jeremy, I want to thank you for your time today and joining us to discuss this case in San Diego.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Jeremy Blank was the attorney representing San Diego Normal in California Superior Court last week. We have links to Jeremy at normalaudiostash.com.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride. Thank you.
Last week, film director Robert Altman passed away. His films like MASH, The Player, Gosford Park, and A Prairie Home Companion all stand out because of the unique creative genius that Altman imbued into his work. The prolific director, writer, and producer was also strikingly honest about smoking marijuana. In 2002, Altman joined the Normal Advisory Board, a group of celebrities, scientists, doctors, and activists who give their names as an endorsement of the longest-running marijuana reform organization in America. Often, it's a personal contact with someone at Normal that serves as a catalyst for joining the Normal Advisory Board. In Altman's case, it was Dan Vietz, the vice chair of the Normal Foundation and a defense attorney in Missouri. I had the chance to speak with Dan about this quintessential American director. Dan, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you, Chris, very much.
Dan, tell us a bit about Robert Altman and his involvement with Normal.
Well, Altman was outspoken in favor of marijuana legalization for many years. He was very out front about his own marijuana use and was quoted in many mainstream periodicals as saying that his marijuana use was a very positive thing, and he felt that it contributed to his creative process. And so we approached him. I approached Bob, as he seems to be universally known. I became acquainted with Robert Altman's daughter here in Missouri, and through that acquaintance wound up meeting Bob Altman, and met him a couple of times when he was filming a movie called Kansas City in Kansas City, Missouri. And that was a really good film, one of the lesser-known Altman films of recent years. It was a good occasion to meet him and his family. All of his films were family productions. He'd have his son running the camera and another one of his offspring doing the set decorating, and they were real family affairs. Now, Altman was a independent director in the truest sense of the word, a producer and director, but he had very strong feelings about marijuana law and was very happy to join Normal's advisory board and put his name on our stationery.
Bob Altman spent his childhood in Missouri being raised with a strong Catholic influence. In 1943, with World War II in full swing, he joined the U.S. Army Air Corps, as the Air Force was called then, and began flying as co-pilot on B-24 heavy bombers. Dan tells us about Altman's personal history.
Well, he grew up in Kansas City, Missouri. And he was born there and spent his early life there, began his filmmaking career in Kansas City, Missouri. Walt Disney and some other filmmakers did. Kansas City's not, I think, widely known as a film production center, but the truth is a lot of the talents of Hollywood came out of Kansas City, Missouri. And so Altman began to make a career in Kansas City, making industrial films and segued gradually into making documentaries. He started making documentary films as well as other films in Kansas City. I believe that he started making his James Dean biography while he was still in Kansas City. One of the best Altman biographies that's out there is one by Patrick McGilligan. It's called Jumping Off the Cliff, is what Altman regarded himself as doing each time he started production on a new film. And he was always in production on a new film. One of the amazing things about this guy is that even into his 60s and 70s and in his early 80s, he always had another film project. He was never idle. He never took a break. Even when he died last week, he had another film project already underway. But as it turns out, Prairie Home Companion will be Robert Altman's final film. And there's some irony in that, I think, in that Altman regarded Prairie Home Companion as being, to a large extent, about death. And if you've seen the film, you can see that theme in it. Now, Garrison Keillor said during his live broadcast this past Saturday that he didn't think Prairie Home Companion was about death, but in fact, one of the cast members of the show dies during the film, and the character, the Angel of Death, portrayed by Virginia Madsen, is one of the key figures in the film. And so Altman regarded that film as being, to some degree at least, about death, and I think it is one of his best works, frankly. I really enjoyed Prairie Home Companion, the film. But, of course, Altman had just made great movies his entire adult life. Probably MASH is certainly the one which is going to be remembered by many people the best, but Nashville was right up there with MASH in the eyes of many critics as a great ensemble film. In more recent years, he'd made a film called Pret-a-Porter about the fashion industry, made a film called Shortcuts about the making of movies, about the Hollywood movie industry. Gosford Park, nominated for Best Picture. He was nominated for Best Director on 5 occasions. And then earlier this year, thank goodness, he was around long enough to receive an honorary Lifetime Achievement Academy Award in March of this year.
Altman's work was never in the genre of hippie culture and included many westerns and films centered on military life and situations, like 1983's Streamers with Matthew Modine, starring in the film adaptation of the David Rabe play. Streamers dealt with the issue of a gay man in the army and how his bunkmates reacted to him. Altman was constantly pushing the limits in his visual presentations, editing decisions, and choice of scripts. That kind of artistic ability takes real courage, something Altman also exhibited with his openness regarding marijuana. Dan, tell us about some of the things Altman said or were written about him regarding marijuana.
Back to McGilligan's book, and I think, again, it's one of the best sources. McGilligan says that virtually everyone who knew Altman agreed that marijuana was a tonic for him. It calmed him down. Altman was a man of tremendous energy and drive, and sometimes to a fault. It tempered the tensions and frustrations that he felt, and on a day-to-day basis made the director more of an agreeable human being. That's the opinion of people who knew him well, worked and lived with him. Quote, it mellowed him out by 100%, says one man who worked with him. Even though you would not classify him as mellow, for him it was a marvelous tonic. He was a lot more controllable, a lot more understanding. His sense of humor was a lot gentler, and marijuana made him a gentle person. Professionally, according to McGilligan, no technological breakthrough, no lens or film stock was half as influential on the director's visual style as marijuana was. The gauzy atmospherics, the off-focus, and the tactile lighting, striving for an anti-glamorous reality, the sifting and winnowing of the camera work, these were emergent in the best of Altman's television work, but were also reinforced in the 60s by the effect of marijuana on his imagination. Marijuana shaped his storytelling. Its influence is there in the dream passages in his films, the truncated narrative forms, the quirkiness and the fragmentedness and the vacillating points of view, the bent humor, the queer insights bobbing up amidst the torrent of banality. Indeed, watching some of Altman's movies is an experience akin to a stoned high, with the characters and the storyline, the dialogue and the images wavering in and out of focus. Movies not quite making sense, yet making profound sense. And I think that's an excellent summary of the impact that Altman's marijuana use had on his filmmaking. It was very much a part of the movies he made. You know, I want to say, too, I mean, if people are thinking about picking out an Altman film to watch, one of the greatest ones, and I think it illustrates that impact, is McCabe and Mrs. Miller, a Western. People don't think of Altman as a Western, but he made a Western filmmaker, but he made a couple of them. And McCabe and Mrs. Miller is an excellent film. There's actually opium being smoked in that film, but there are definitely some sequences that suggest marijuana use as well. One of the other films, little known, that Altman produced, he did not direct, but I'm sure as producer had total control over what went into that movie, was the one called The Late Show with Art Carney and Lily Tomlin, about a semi-retired private detective in Hollywood. And I think, again, to me at least, The Late Show seems to show some of the impact that marijuana might have had on Altman's filmmaking.
Normal's advisory board sends the message to tens of millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly that it's culturally safe for them to speak out on this important issue. When prominent Americans demonstrate the courage to challenge current policies, average Americans are empowered to do the same. The Normal Advisory Board currently includes PBS travel host Rick Steves, social satirist and comedian Bill Maher, actor Woody Harrelson, singer-songwriter Willie Nelson, San Francisco District Attorney Terrence Hallinan, comedian and author Tommy Chong, Mark Stepanski, former Dallas Cowboys NFL player, Nobel laureate Carrie Mullis, Ph.D., Dr. Mitch Earlywine, professor of psychology at State University of New York, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, and many others. Dan, tell us about the Normal Advisory Board. I know that when individuals join, it's a very strong endorsement of the Normal Foundation and its message.
That's right. It is. And he was on the Normal board, as well as being a supporter of the foundation. They're actually two separate corporate entities. But Bob Altman was doing, I think when he joined our advisory board, it was a natural extension of what he had already done, and that is to be outspoken in interviews published in Newsweek and Time magazine about marijuana use, about his own use, about it being a positive impact on his life. I think by joining the advisory board, he was just formalizing what he had already been doing. And that, again, is simply putting his name on a controversial issue, having the courage to be outspoken and to buck the trend. I mean, to say that not only does he think that marijuana prohibition is wrong, but to actually say that he found marijuana use to be a positive thing in his life. Now, when people serve on the advisory board, it means that they receive a lot of information about what Normal is doing. They receive weekly updates. They receive basically everything that we print. And we invite the members of the advisory board to let us know if there's anything that they have to criticize or anything that they want to make us aware that they especially like. Altman was not a terribly active advisory board member, but he was there during the past several years to witness everything that Normal was involved in. I know one of the things that he was very well aware of and that he looked on with approval was the incredible PR campaign that Normal launched in New York City just a few years back. There had been an interview in the early part of the campaign with the mayor of New York saying that he had smoked marijuana and he did inhale and he enjoyed it. And it was kind of a different spin on the Bill Clinton statement, of course. And so we launched a PR campaign in New York City just simply quoting the mayor saying that yes, I inhaled and I enjoyed it. And so the mayor was not thrilled that we were doing that, but he could hardly deny the statement that he had made just a few months earlier. And so Altman was very well aware, of course, too, because that made such a tremendous impact in New York City. He was very well aware, and I think he was very pleased that we had taken that action. Of course, we were not criticizing the mayor. We were complimenting the mayor, both for his outspokenness and his forthrightness.
Dan, do you think it's easier or harder for celebrities and high-profile individuals to make public their views on marijuana or their own experiences with marijuana?
Well, it may be easier in a sense once you achieve a level of fame and respect that both Altman and Willie Nelson have. But at the same time, there's always a cost. There's always at least a potential downside, which is that, you know, some people, some members of the public, certainly a lot of members of the government aren't going to appreciate your doing that. And so I think that both of those gentlemen have shown a lot of courage in lending their name to marijuana law reform. I hope, and as far as I'm aware, neither of them have been singled out for prosecution or persecution. But they understand that risk, I think, when they put their name on this issue, as indeed all of us who are outspoken on this issue accept that that's a possible downside.
And Dan, the Normal Advisory Board really is also setting an example for the rest of us. Do you think it's possible for regular people to be as outspoken on the issue of marijuana as those on the advisory board?
Yes, it is. It is something we should all do. And it requires courage on our part, just as it did on Robert Altman's and Willie Nelson's part to do that. Everybody has a reason to be outspoken. You know, when people say, oh, I wish I could, but my employer wouldn't tolerate it. I wish I could, but my mom won't tolerate it. Well, we all have employers. We all have moms. We all have something who we're concerned about. I mean, that's the nature of taking a risk. That's the nature of making a statement on an issue of controversy. And yet, all of us should follow Robert Altman's example. All of us should show the courage that he showed and speak the truth.
Robert Altman's prolific body of work will survive forever as a testament to one of America's best-known directors. We'll dive into the last golden age of Hollywood, watching The Player, conduct Battlefield Meatball Surgery in MASH, explore the ultimate American film icon in the James Dean Story documentary, and with brilliant brushstrokes of cellulose encased images, Watch's comedy, radio, reality, and American sensibility are blended into a Prairie Home Companion. His legacy is not just on screen. Bob Altman's unrestrained, honest approaches to marijuana are part of his legacy as an American and a human being.
That's absolutely right. Robert Altman made certain to bring up marijuana use, his own marijuana use, in his interviews with major mainstream media, and he was never shy about that. And it obviously did not impair his motivation, far from it. The so-called amotivational syndrome never showed up in Robert Altman's life. He went on making movies right up until the time he died at the age of 81.
Robert Altman passed away last week in Los Angeles. He was 81 years old. His films MASH and Nashville have been selected for archival preservation in the National Film Registry. Us today to discuss Bob Altman and the Normal Advisory Board was Dan Vietz, the Vice Chair of the Normal Foundation and Coordinator of Missouri Normal. Dan, thanks again for joining us here today.
You're very welcome, Chris.
Dan hosts a weekly radio program in Columbia, Missouri. We have links to it on our website. You can also read about the current members of the Normal Advisory Board with links at normalaudiostash.com.
Hi, this is Keith Stropp, founder of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. When I founded the organization in 1970 to create a national discussion on the need to legalize marijuana for responsible adult use, no one honestly believed that 36 years later, marijuana would still be an illegal and untaxed commodity. However, since NORML began this important advocacy effort, 12 states have decriminalized the possession of marijuana, and 11 states have passed medical marijuana laws or voter initiatives, meaning that over one-third of the American population lives in a state or municipality that has reformed their marijuana laws. Isn't it time that Congress step in and pass national legislation to reform marijuana laws? Let's finish the job of legalizing marijuana once and for all by you and your like-minded friends joining and supporting NORML's long-standing advocacy. You can learn more about NORML's marijuana law reform efforts or become an active supporter by calling toll-free 888-67-NORMAL or by visiting www.normal.org.
This has been NORML's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. podcasting technology of normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.